Is this the perfect time? Like, the opportunity presented itself, and we were like, look, we could either spend this time playing PlayStation, watching movies, let's create something here. And we'd always wanted to go to business together, always passionate about it. I actually brought the idea to him at the start, and I'm like, look, I got this idea. And he'd heard of it before, but I was like, let's actually do it. And he's like,
even while we're working and doing the business at the same time, like, we're getting paid what X amount, and like majority of it was just going back into the business. Oh, we need to pay for this on next day. And it was just like this rotation of getting paid and just putting it back into the business.
We were 21 at the time. We've got no mortgage, we've got no kids. You know, if you lose the initial investment, you're gonna learn a lot along the way anyway. It's really difficult because like you've got to delay all your gratification right at the start.
Influencers were like really big. So during that time, we were databasing thousands and thousands of influencers, and we predicted this launch, like, all right, we're gonna do mass send out and it's gonna blow up. But like, it didn't.
Put it this way, like, I've never struggled to get out of bed, work on the business. But like, if you're working for someone else, there's days you just can't be bothered. It's just so much easier to have discipline for your own thing as well. I think we're both massive on just being disciplined. Like, motivation's not going to be there all the time, but because it's yours, like, you just have this obligation to do everything you can for it.
Just quickly before we get started, guys, if you've been enjoying the podcast, can I please ask that you consider leaving a 5-star review and subscribing on whatever platform you've been listening? It really helps the podcast grow.
All right, we're back. We've got another e-com episode. We haven't had one for about a month. So, you know, I love these episodes where we get people on that, you know, are in the first couple of years of business and their life is literally changing in front of their eyes. So today we've got Aiden and Michael from Brunei Body. They're the new Aussie tanning brand that sells a bottle every 9 minutes. So crazy, crazy stuff, man. I've seen the articles. I know what you've done. And we're going to talk about the whole journey because I think it's really interesting and relatable for people to hear, people that, like I said, like, your lives are changing as we speak. Like, your life 3-4 years ago, which we'll touch on, is like completely different to where you are now. Yeah, so it's 100%. such an exciting time for you. And it's good to hear from people while they're actually in that phase. But something we'll get to in a little bit, which is so crazy. You guys, not too long ago, were doing like 10K months. And then essentially overnight, you went from 10K to the next month, 100K. So yeah. 10X growth essentially overnight. We'll unpack that. There'll be heaps of people listening that want to hear how you guys done that. But now doing, you know, up to over 300K per month, doing some really exciting numbers and really bright future ahead of you. So first of all, thanks for coming, boys.
Thanks for having us.
Making the trip in Sydney. Welcome to the podcast. And another one, first time on. So it's really cool. First time anyone will really hear the background to all this story. But where I want to start before we get a little bit of background is just like, talk to me about that, because I know a lot of people don't think about, stop and reflect, is like, think about how crazy it is, how much your life has changed over like the last 2-3 years.
It's been pretty insane. So Mike and I have known each other for like the better part of 15 years. Yeah. So went to high school together, always had a bit of a passion for business as well. So we'd always joke around saying like, oh, when we finished school, we start a business together. And I guess like when we finished school, we were pretty green still, but very different to how we are now, but COVID sort of rolled around.
Yep.
And Mike and I were chatting. We're like, look, let's just go into business scale. Let's go for it. I was working at the time. Mike was working at the time. But yeah, now if we look back on that and reflect, you start to feel like, wow, it just feels like a lifetime ago, right? It's just so long ago where we were in that spot. So massive change from where we are now.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. Sorry to cut you off, bro. We're just talking off air. It's like, so the three of you boys, Yui behind the camera, all 25, I'm 30. So it's like when you guys were in high school, already having the thoughts of like, dude, you know what, let's fucking start a business together. Who are the brands, do you remember at the time you guys were in high school, who are the brands that you looked at and like really inspired you to like start a business? Was there anyone that you could think of? Because obviously like when I was in high school, e-com, no one really spoke about e-com, but you guys kind of might've got a bit of that while you're in high school to like G you up and inspire you to do something. Who was it? Do you remember?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously we're two males in a female dominated market.
Yeah.
We got a lot of inspiration from the Ally boys.
Yeah.
Even the High Smile boys, I think they're both crushing it.
Everyone looks up to the High Smile.
They're the OGs, man. They were them and Bondi Sands were the ones for us.
Yeah. But so we got a lot of inspiration for those boys. Obviously heaps relatable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, I think we learned a lot from them at the time.
Yeah.
We actually got into consulting with one of the lads.
Oh, cool. From Aliyah. Yeah.
So he actually gave us a lot of contacts to get us started.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really pushed us at the start. He basically threw us in the deep end. We're like, fuck it, man. Let's just go for it. You know?
Dude, isn't that crazy as well? And like there's fucking absolutely heaps of sick female founded businesses. And I think the trend is in the last few years, there's been more and more that are really fucking successful. Look at Bang & Body. They've absolutely been crazy. But it's like, look at that era. It's like, like the High Smile boys, the Bondi Sands boys, me and George, two boys, you guys, two boys, Elias Skin, the Pure You. Like there's something about two guys getting into like a female dominated product that sometimes it just really works. And it's like, I speak to people all the time that are like starting their first businesses. I do a lot of mentoring with people starting e-com, and like, it's different. There's two different ways to look at it when starting your first business. There's, do you pick a business and build it around like a product or a passion of yours from the start, which is an awesome way to go about it potentially because it's something so aligned with you. Maybe the opportunity isn't as clear and it might take a little bit more work. Or like we were speaking about again, just before we started recording, you don't actually need to be, you know, absolutely in love or crazy about the industry, because when it's your first business, like you fall in love with the process, you fall in love with 100%. Doing the business and building it and like changing your lives. And like when you're just these two young people, whether male or female, and you start doing things for the first time ever, because when you're going to school or you're going to uni or you're working a job, like you're putting hours in, but you're not really creating anything for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just moving through, you know, the different stages that, you know, everyone does, but it's exciting that first time that you actually be like, okay, we're going to commit and actually do something. When was that moment for you guys? You said you spoke about it at high school. When was the moment, do you remember when it got brought up one time and it actually triggered you to go and do something about it? And then how does that moment there turn into the product? Like how do you find the product from that point?
Yeah, well, I think I'll touch on it and then you can
go for it.
So it was actually Aiden who had the idea at the start. We're always in discussion, like you said, about going into business together. And then when I was at uni, one of the electives was to create a business about something and a website. So I was like, fuck, what can I create?
Yeah.
I remember Aiden told me about this idea. It was about standing.
It's still my idea.
Yeah. I was just like, fuck it. I'll just do an assignment on it. Anyway, cut a long story short, did the assignment, got through, and then, COVID came and we're just like, fuck, man, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? This and that. And
So what uni degree were you studying to do this?
Yeah, so project management. I was studying project management.
Yeah.
It was just an elective of anything. So you could basically choose anything. So yeah, lost my words a bit there. Got into COVID and then me and Aiden were discussing, fuck, what are we going to do?
Because Melbourne, you've had a proper big, like, I'm over talking about lockdown and shit, but you guys like would have had
the worst on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, I think we had the strictest one out of anywhere. So when that time came around, we were
What were you doing? You're in uni in lockdown uni and stuff, and you're working on uni?
I was working full-time in finance.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously still working long days, like 9-10-hour days, but, like, when you're at home, you don't have to commute. You've got an extra 3 hours up your sleeve. And, like, it was just the perfect time. Like, the opportunity presented itself, and we were like, look, we could either spend this time playing PlayStation, watching movies, which, like, you end up doing a little bit of, right? But use that time, you were like, let's create something here. And we'd always wanted to go into business together, always passionate about it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't necessarily say we were massively passionate about tanning, so I don't care what we went into. Mm-hmm. But we started to go down a bit of a rabbit hole and we found a product that, you know, we felt had a lot of desire around it. And I think we're pretty firm believers that you can't really create a desire in market. You just have to find something and find out, figure out how to channel that desire and speak to the audience and figure that side out. So we knew that market was there. And we knew there would be product market fit within that market. Mm-hmm. And then we started talking. We're like, look, I actually brought the idea to him at the start. And I'm like, look, I got this idea. And he'd heard of it before. And I was like, let's actually do it. And he's like, man, fuck.
So what is exactly like, was the first product? Was it the tanning oil? Was it the moisturizer? Yeah.
So we launched two products to start.
Okay, yeah.
The hero product is the tanning oil. And then we based all the rest of the product range around that.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off.
I was just going to ask.
I was going to say, like, the tanning oil, basically, like, we understood, like, at the time that pretty saturated market for tanning oils, and traditional tanning oils we felt weren't that great for your skin in terms of, like, a skincare perspective. So we were heavily focused on skincare. So
we
were creating and formulating the product. We were looking at products on the market that weren't even related or competing with a tanning oil, like actual skincare products that had clinically proven ingredients in it that we could take and put within our product that had a specific purpose to hydrate, nourish the skin while you tan. So that was the first thing. And then the other thing we wanted to do was help people tan with less time in the sun. So we were going back and forth with our manufacturer and we said to her, look, we want to do this, but we want to do so as natural as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we landed on this complex of natural oils that's known for its ability to help with melanin production.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously done laser, so you know all about melanin.
I'm tanned as, boys, as you can see. I know we'll a thing or two about tanning. I need a double dose of that if I stand any chance.
But yeah, basically for those of you who don't know, the more melanin you have, the easier it is to tan. So we basically put that together and we thought, well, we've got a premium product there and let's build a range around that. So we start with that flagship product and then build from there.
So going into the market, I like your concept, you approach it a little bit differently. Instead of, hey, let's not try and create a demand. Like, we know there's a demand for a certain product already existing. How do you then, so what did you think to do, you know, going to market? Like, what was your thoughts? Like, if we're going to go into tanning, and like you said, it's a relatively saturated market in terms of the traditional formulations. How did you guys go about like deciding how you're going to differentiate yourself? Because like you said, like there's loads of tanning, tanning products out there.
Yeah, it's tricky. I'd love to say at that time we were thinking about how we are like now. there was an element of like that we did sort of land on that sort of product and we think about it, all right, well, how do we basically use our creators, for instance, to take the consumer from A to B and help them solve a pain point using our ad as the vehicle to help them solve it and that product as a solution. So at the time, like, we knew it was a bit different. Like, we knew that like it had a range of really high quality ingredients in it. And when you look at traditional tanning oils that you buy from the supermarket or a chemist, if you actually put one on and you've used one before, it feels like you've jumped in a tub of olive oil and not like extra virgin olive oil, like real thick.
Yeah.
Like, you feel greasy, you feel gross. So the feel was a big thing. The scent was a big thing at the time. We were pretty heavily focused on those features. But in terms of like the actual product and how we were solving pain points and helping people get from A to B, we focus a lot more on that now than we did at the time.
Yeah. And what was it, the point that you reached out to do some consulting? Was it to decide on a product idea once you already had that, once you launched?
Yeah.
Where does that like piece of the jigsaw fit in?
Yeah. No, so Aiden had the product first.
Okay, cool.
So
stole it off uni or something.
So we had the product and then we saw one of the lads offering consulting and we're just like, fuck it, let's just go for it. Let's just message him. So I messaged him on IG. He replied back pretty quickly. He's like, hey, bro, come see me in my office tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
So we both went there.
We're like next day. Straight
in. Zero time.
Yeah. So we went in, pitched the idea to him and he loved it. And then he was obviously in the industry and he had a lot of contacts which would help us and lead us in the right direction. And then I think from that day, we were so deep, we couldn't turn back.
Yeah, so when you say you had the product, was it you had the idea or everything was
fine? So we had the idea and then we obviously moved into a product research. Mm. I think it was like a week or 2 weeks, we just did like 2 hours or 3 hours a day on research on like
ingredients and stuff.
Feel, scent. And then eventually we're just like, all right, how are we going to know what people like? So I remember creating SurveyMonkey surveys.
Dude, isn't that funny the first time? You're like, SurveyMonkey, that's probably the best way to do market research.
So I was literally creating all these questions. Oh, what feel do you like? What scent do you like? Mm-hmm. What do you currently use? And then I just sent it out to all the girls on my Instagram. It was like 400 girls. Like,
yeah.
And we're just like, fuck. Got all the data back. Or I said, oh, this is what people are liking. This is what people aren't liking. And then we just got all the data and basically went to our manufacturer and said, is this possible? And then, here we are now with the product.
So from the data, because sometimes doing research can make things more, you know, less clear, can muddy the water even more so. Was it from the data you got back when you analyzed it, was there some pretty clear areas for opportunity? And like, was it a relatively easy brief to go and, you know, give to like a contract manufacturer to develop? Or was there a lot of the stuff that, you know, you're getting contradicting views and opinions from everyone? And like, obviously you're never going to be able to create a product that absolutely ticks every single box, every single person. Yeah. How did that like kind of decision go to take that data and give it to someone to make some samples?
Yeah. So we have a great relationship with our manufacturer. I think at the time we did heaps of research, got the wish list that we thought was possible and what the data said, and then handed out went back to our manufacturer and said, all right, is this possible? And we went back and forth for multiple months. I think it was like 5 or 6 samples to perfect the product. So it did take a while, but I think the data that we did at the start and the research like really, really helped skip a lot of those months.
What was the harder product to develop, the moisturizer or the tanning oil?
I think they were both pretty difficult to get right. We were going back and forth for ages and we wanted to test it on like all different skin types. So we just like messaged every girl we knew, and yeah. we were just getting it into
well,
the
you got to do it first time.
We were meeting up with girls on the weekend, like with yeah. like three little oil samples saying, oh, what do you like about this? What do you like? And just that's like go best. To like different groups of girls, man. It was
yeah, man. Was crazy. Like, what you got to do, bro. We bump into girls in the street and be like, hey, we're random. Like, have you ever done laser hair removal before? Like, why did you stop? What did you like about it? Yeah, that's the way, bro. Like, you know, people try and complicate it and think, you know, I don't have enough resources to do any research. It's like, well, you do. You just have to get really resourceful and just really scrappy at the beginning, bro. And that's all you can do. You're not an expert when you launch your first business, far from. Even like 6-7 years in, you're far from that. You just got to start.
100%.
Know what I mean? So okay, you go fucking back and forth to that point. How do you then, like, what's their total cost? Because contract manufacturing, it's pretty compared to finding a random product off, like, you know, just straight private label off somewhere off Alibaba. There's usually a lot more cost involved. Was that something you guys had to invest a bit of coin into?
Well, we basically invested everything we had at that point. I think, we even while we're working and doing the business at the same time, like we're getting paid what X amount. And like majority of it was just going back into the business. Oh, we need to pay for this on next day. And it was just like this rotation of getting paid and just putting it back into the business. It was,
What were you guys doing for work at that point?
I was in finance.
Finance, and you were doing?
So I was working at the airport.
Oh, that's it. You're doing customs.
At the airport,
And what was going through your head in terms of like when you're making the decision to put like, say, like 70% of your pay straight into the business account, what was going through your head in terms of I'm taking a big risk here or it didn't feel like a risk? Explain kind of your thought process behind that and how you approached it.
Just a quick one from me. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'd know that after scaling Happy Skin Co. to over $10 million per year, I spent close to 18 months creating the Viral Brand Builder program, which teaches someone with zero experience how to launch and scale their very own e-commerce brand. With over 100 training videos and direct access to me, including one-on-one calls, you'll be guided throughout the entire process. Now, we already have a bunch of incredible results from students that are making multiple 5 and 6 figures per month. So if you want to learn how to build a business that has the potential to completely change your life, then click the link in the description and book in an application call today. Spots are limited as you'll be speaking directly to me. So hopefully I'll chat to some of you soon. But until then, let's get back to the podcast.
I think for us, we were 21 at the time. So we'd sort of like in our heads landed on this point where we were like, well, we got no mortgage, we got no kids.
It's the best time, just fuck it. Yeah.
Like if you lose, like, you know, if you lose the initial investment, you're going to learn a lot along the way anyway. So I know that sounds very cliche, but like it's such a good opportunity. If you do have money to put aside and you're really passionate about doing something, you just go for it. And then your back's up against the wall as well. So you want to make it work. But then once you're already have invested, like say you've invested your savings, what's another little bit more that comes in after that? Like you just want to keep doing it until you get somewhere. But it's really difficult because like you got to delay all your gratification, right?
Like 100%. But it's like people say that all the time. Wow. Because I was the same. We put like 20 grand in and by the time I put like my half in, I had less than a grand left. And people just always say like, wow, like I could never do that. Like, how could you take such a big risk? It's like, dude, what difference is my bank account if it's 10,000 or 1,000? I'm not fucking pulling up any trees here anyway. Like you got to do it. Like the risk is staying in a position where you know you're not going to be, be unhappy. You know what I mean? So it's always interesting. Like you just got to do it. Like, I mean, I'm sure even if it failed, no regrets.
Yeah.
Right, that's the only way to do it. Now, I want to ask as well from that pre-launch period because I know we had a bunch and I know everyone does. I've spoken to Yui many times before he just launched his brand. What was your biggest hurdle pre-launch? Like was there any, you guys have any moments or any like challenges that were getting to the point where you're like, I don't know how we're going to overcome this? Or does anything stick out as like the biggest challenge you guys had to overcome? Because 12 months, it's a decently long pre-launch period.
Yeah, so we actually started talking about the business probably August 21.
Mm-hmm.
And then was it 2020?
2020, yeah.
Yeah, so we obviously got all the research, started doing the product field, product development, which took multiple months. And then by the time we realized it was out of summer, so we were ready to go in like February. We're like, oh, fuck, we can't launch this in winter. You know? Like,
no way.
We're a summer brand, so we stopped and we just said, oh, we'll perfect the product more. We'll work with influencers. We'll start to understand the business side a lot more and we'll launch later that year. So I think just understanding like how long a lot of this stuff actually takes, like once the product feel was done, we then had to get packaging and then realized there was a 10,000 order MOQ and it was going to take like 8 weeks to come. And we're just like, fuck, we're so far behind.
Yeah, we thought we were going to be able to order 500 units.
Of packaging?
Of the filled product at the start. And like even one of them was like 300, and then we get the MOQs and we're like, fuck, that's not what we thought.
Really? Yeah, so what was that? Was that like an error on your part, not asking the question?
Yeah, it was just an experience in the industry.
But so you go through all the development, like, yeah, it's going to be. So what did you, how many units did you have to order at the start?
So for the product feel was 2,000 of each, and then the packaging is like, you have to buy 10,000 of each. So we launched two products to start. So all our cash was in this empty inventory, and we're just like, fuck, that's where all our money's going.
So talk me through that launch. Then you had a little bit extra time to, you know, finish, finalize the product, get all the little details right. At what point did you launch in 2021? Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming towards December, like spring, summer.
December 13th.
Yeah. Was that you launched at that point because that's as soon as you were ready or you felt?
What happened was we were going to launch, like, so basically if you're selling a seasonal product, our view is you want to probably start pushing around August, September.
Yeah.
Coming into the season. Exactly. So I think for us, we lost our scent on one of our products. So like the manufacturer of the actual fragrance like went under or something and disappeared.
So we're all ready to go. And then last
our manufacturer called us your scent's gone. And Blado, like when we talk about like loving a scent, like I've never seen him more heartbroken in my life. Like
everything was perfect, ready to go. And then like one call we had and it's all over. And we're like, oh, we're now going to go back and ask these girls. Like we've done all that work on the scent and everything. Yeah. And it's gone like getting just right before we're about to do the mass order. So kind of had to start again and go with the second scent, but we got there in the end.
How would you describe the first scent?
Oh, it was amazing, it was pretty good, man.
He's still like, his background on his phone.
I still ask, I'm like, oh, can we get that scent back? It's just like, it was good.
So talk me through launch. Yeah, because I was going to say, obviously it doesn't sound planned. Like obviously you'd want to launch a little bit earlier, even like Black Friday period could have helped. So you launched mid-December.
Yep.
Do you remember how you got your first sale, who it was? Was it from an ad, organic? What was it?
So at the time, influencers were like really big. So during that time, we're databasing thousands and thousands of influencers and we predicted this launch like, all right, we're going to do mass send out and it's going to blow up. But like it didn't, you know? Like so launch was decent. I think we had the only strategy was influencers. We did a massive send out and like it was okay. We didn't really have a really good sales channel at that point.
Yeah, we had nothing dialed in to the sales channel. But it was like, we're going to do influencer marketing. We didn't know how to run Facebook ads. We didn't have an agency. And we're I remember we would wait for, it would be like the weekend and it'd be a Saturday and it'd be like 30 degrees in Melbourne. Yeah. And we'd be like, fuck, this is the day that,
this is the day we're going to get sales
because people are going to be posting at the beach. So that was our sales channel. And like, as you know, it's never going to work. But for content, it was amazing because we'd get all these people posting and then, started to have like a bit of a cult like following in terms of people wanting to post and at Brunei when they're at the beach.
Yeah.
So it worked really well from that angle.
How many do you reckon you sent out from the original batch?
250 on launch.
250. And how many posts did you think?
Oh,
maybe like
40%. Yeah, 40%. Pretty good hit rate, I think. Mate, most girls around Victoria, Sydney, I'll probably message every single one of them. I think the brand has messaged every single girl, but a lot of them don't reply or don't – it's hard to
get
girls
to post. It's just a numbers game, mate.
You've got to play the numbers game.
But see, that's the thing like that really burnt me in the early days. And it's funny, I actually was at an event with the High Smile guys and we were like probably 6 months in. We're growing crazy quick.
Yeah.
But remember for our product, think about it, like we're selling our products for like $300. Like even our cost price, it's like I don't want to still a decent amount of money to send to for like less than half people to post. Really fucking burns you, man. But like, it's just part of the process. Have you guys, obviously the roles of influencers in terms of like marketing and like, they're still really good for content and I guess brand, maybe less so in terms of conversion. Like when we started, like conversion off the back of influencers was really strong. But did you guys, how have you managed that today? Like, are you just like tracking them all in an Excel sheet to use any of the software to do that for you?
We've got our own Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
We used to do mass send out, but like that strategy doesn't work anymore. I think we work closely with like a select few influencers and start to build that relationship. And like, even though we send them 3 or 4 products over a 6 month period, like we know the content we're going to get and it's going to work. So we can just feed that into Facebook. And
So how much, so when you say like it kind of worked, what do you mean by that? Like they didn't really drive conversions, most of the girls? Start? Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just like, we thought it, like their influence and engagement from their accounts would drive heaps of traffic to our website, but it doesn't really do that. I think, it was very difficult. Like obviously for content, we could use it for organic, but like we never had a paid strategy at that point. So it was kind of just like, oh yeah, on the stories, telling maybe word of mouth. I think that was probably the only benefits we got from it at that
point. So who was the first sale? Where did it come from? Like that wasn't like friends or family.
I think it was friends and family, yeah, to be honest. Yeah. I think
we had a fair bit on our list. Like, yeah, because we had like 12 months before we launched of like just collecting names. I don't think we had more than like 1,000 people on the list.
Yeah,
but
I
think we did like five. Did we do $1,000 in the first
day? $1,000
the first day. That's pretty good, man. $1,000 in the first day. Did we did one sale in the first day? Yeah. We did like $250 in the first day.
It's hard to look at the high price product.
Like, in the third day, we did over $5,000, but changed pretty quickly. But first day, $1,000, you guys would have been buzzing.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good. But I guess like we didn't have anything dialed in terms of like an actual sales channel. Mm-hmm. Were you running Facebook ads when you started?
Yeah, our first sale was from a Facebook ad.
We were hearing like that was the time where people were like Facebook ads are dead, like they're not working anymore. Like sort of back end of 2021, that was sort of the narrative there. And then like influencer marketing was not dead in terms of content, but also just like really hard to drive a sales channel from.
Yeah.
So we were like, and look, they weren't dead Facebook ads, but we were just like, didn't have.
It was mainly the costs were just so high, man.
Yeah.
That was probably the peak of the cost. It dropped for a little bit, like when they were in lockdown, because like a lot of the brands that were like in on location really couldn't advertise. So that really helped. Yeah. But there was a period, and that was like around all the iOS changes as well, that like a lot of people were like a little bit lost. I actually think that Facebook ads are having a little bit of a resurgence in 2024.
Yeah,
I feel like they're coming back.
It's a new era of Facebook.
It feels good, doesn't it?
The
good thing for beginners is like it's actually easier now than it used to be. Like it's easier and it's not. Like I would still take it how it was five years ago, any day of the week.
Yeah.
But like in terms of if you don't really know what you're doing, like if you can get some good content and you know the right basic setups for your campaigns, you can be really successful. It's not like micromanagement so much anymore. Or like we used to day trade accounts and that was hectic because like you could just like see an account, like see one of your like ad sets or one ad or anything was on like 11 ROAS.
Yeah.
And then you just like, what we used to do back in the day was crazy. Like 11 ROAS, spent like say $300 just on this one ad or one ad or whatever. Let's just keep putting money into it and increasing the budget until that 11 comes down to like a, scaled so quick. Like most of our sales, not like most. Yeah. I'd still say over half were coming from influencers until. So we launched in April until Black Friday is when we really figured out Facebook ads. And like our spend went from like probably in that period, we learned how to spend from like 1,000 to like 10,000.
Yeah. That's
and great. That's like, it's fucking mental when you learn how to do that. But yeah, so you've spoken about like your business is doing really well now. But like the first year, talking through that, you guys said like nothing crazy was happening in the first year. Sales were like coming through, but obviously it wasn't enough to like, you know, leave your jobs behind. What did that first year look like? And then once you've kind of set that scene, talk to me about the moment that things essentially changed overnight and you went from doing 10K a month to 100K a month.
So when we got started, we obviously was doing the influence strategy, but then summer started to taper off. So obviously there was no market, there was no intent anymore. So we kind of had to look to global expansion. So we started doing the same strategy in the US, but it was very expensive. Like sending parcels over to girls in America was like $30. Parcels were getting lost. It was just so hard to manage. And like going into the US market with like no real credibility is like super, super difficult. So after the US, we knew something had to change. So we called the rebirth stage where we really, really dialed in on our website, all the website metrics like AOV, conversion rate, all the flows that come behind that. And then our messaging, we really changed our messaging and
I think with our messaging, like when we started off and we ran Facebook, because we did run Facebook ads at the start during that summer period, but they weren't successful at all. Like there was some
been
days,
losing money or like
burning it, like setting on fire basically. It wasn't, we had an ad buyer and like, I wouldn't say it was completely his fault because we just didn't give him the resources he needed as well to go and run the ads. Like we had like four or five creatives. Now like we pump in like 10, 15 creatives a week. We're constantly rolling in new creative.
So what creative in terms of like 2024, like what sort of creatives you're putting in? Is it a mixture of static and video? Is it UGC, high production value? That's really always really valuable to know what sort of content is working for brands.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's heaps of UGC, like girls using the product and getting results. I think that's That's what works amazing for us. But just most recently, a lot more behind the scenes. Like
okay,
me and
cool.
Aiden have been getting on camera. Like yeah. The founder angle's working quite well. So well it's ads. Surprising, yeah, on Facebook.
Surprising, yeah. Yeah. I've never, like everyone obviously knows that I'm the founder of Abby Skinker, but I've never, I've always resisted putting myself in that because I'm like, oh, I just don't know how they would respond to that.
That's what we initially thought.
Like, we're a just, guy, like clearly I can't, like I'm not using, you know what I mean? Yeah, like how they respond, but no, really like it's working well. Interesting.
I think that's part of the reason why it works because it's just so unique and obscure to everything they've probably seen. And then they see like us on the camera.
Yeah.
And you probably don't people want to see a face behind the brand. They want it like it's very relatable to the customer.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. So yeah, so you've changed your messaging.
Yeah.
What clicked for you to realize you had to change your messaging? Were you like reading a book, podcast? Yeah. Like, would you do like more mentoring? What was what was the situation?
So we did a course actually. It was in Canada. I think we spent like $2,000-$3,000 on this course, which really like helped us optimize the website, like I was touching on. But yeah.
So was that course like all on website stuff?
Yeah. So it was like a lesson course. We'd watch videos and then implement it into our store.
Nice.
Shout out Sabri Subri. Sell like crazy. We read that book and that's what really helped with our messaging and like really learning the science of advertising and marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where we dialed in massively. Yeah. Like nice. Even just on like the psychology of like why someone buys a product, like figuring out what their desires are, figuring out what their pain points are and then creating ads around that to channel those in and help them solve their problems. Then copywriting as well, learning how to do different hooks that appeal to different audiences and understanding the full sales funnel as well. So when I was in finance, I was in sales background. So had a bit of knowledge on the sales funnel already, like how to get someone from basically like unaware to closed. And then we sort of put that within our messaging as well. Like there's all different parts of the funnel that people exist in. So you got to target them differently. And at the start, we didn't think about that at all. It was just like, we'll put that ad in.
Just run ads and hopefully it'll work.
Yeah, it's such an elementary level to what we do now. Like we've got a full science behind what we do in every different part of the funnel and every different sort of desire and pain point. Like another thing we did, which was really helpful, was we went through a lot of our reviews and our competitor reviews and just found like what are the modal pain points? What are the most frequently occurring things that people are talking about that's wrong with a product or that they want to fix in themselves or what are they looking to achieve and what are their desires and how can we put all that stuff? Because that's real data from people using the product and using your competitors' products.
100%. There's so much gold in reviews, whether it be on your website or your competitors. And a lot of the time, the best ones is like, the 3 and 4 stars because like they're really honest and like I'll tell you it was good but I wish it had this or but this wasn't great or it's gold. So were you guys at that point running the ads yourself or you still had a media buyer who you were sitting next to?
So we had a media buyer at the start and like Aiden touched on but like really didn't do that well.
Was it just like a freelancer like an agency?
Freelancer at that point. And then we did a lot more work on the back end of it. And then we signed with an agency who actually initially knocked us back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then they decided to give us a free trial over 2 months. And the rest is history kind of.
Yeah. So in terms of like, it's interesting, like you say, like you've got your ad account. It's a bit like a science. I've found talking to a lot of people that are in e-com and that are doing pretty big numbers. People have like a wide array of like, vastly different ad account setups as well.
Yep.
Some people will have like no targeting campaigns and like they'll be spending 80% of their budget on Advantage Plus. Are you guys a little bit more regimented and structured, a little bit more the old school way or are you guys moving to Advantage Plus as well?
We actually were on a call yesterday. It's funny you say that. And like we do all broad. Like still all broad now. And like we-
Do you like exclude men or-
We didn't know, we do females and then an age bracket like 18 to 50. Mm-hmm. But we just let Facebook kind of decide.
That's
man.
The
like,
way
we,
these
we run like a We run a bit of a different structure and like obviously we're still with the agency now. We're going to bring the ads in-house at the end of this month.
Will that be one of you guys running the ads? Are you going to hire for that?
No, it would be us.
Nice.
And
that's good.
We'll have them on as like a coaching consultant still. So they work any issues.
So they're open to that? They're not taking it
we've
like-
We've got a great
really
relationship
with them.
Nice.
That's the thing. Like a lot of people will say like, oh, I've had the worst experience with agencies. Like, and probably that's true for a lot of cases, but we couldn't say a bad word about the boys. Like they've helped us literally grow our business. They've been an integral part of it.
Yeah, cool.
And we wouldn't be where we are without them today.
Yeah.
So,
are they down in Melbourne with you?
They're from Brizzy. Shout out Elliot and Jack, actually.
Oh, nice. who's that?
They're from M3 Digital.
M3 Digital, okay.
So, they're really good operators. Nice. So, but they're like really transparent with them. They're going to help us out. But
yeah, that's sick if you can navigate it like that and 100%. Not like, oh, you're fucking leaving.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Some agencies, you would have heard the horror stories. Like, ever let an agency set up your pixel and own all that. Like, you're going to get in proper drama. So that's really good, man, that you're going to navigate it like that. What was it like was understanding your numbers a big point of like that scaling process too? Like understanding, okay, like first of all, where's our break-even ROAS? And where's like our, you know, baseline ROAS that we want to hit? So that we're making money, we're not absolutely killing it. But as long as that's a baseline, we don't have to like, there's no panic stations. And then did you guys set like, okay, stretch targets. If the ROAS is at this, we can keep incrementally increasing spend. How did you guys go about navigating the increase in budgets? Because obviously changing your messaging is going to, you know, improve things, but it's like, you're only really going to scale once you learn how to give the algorithm what it wants in a way without freaking it out so much that allows you to scale.
Yeah. We use a lot of, we like run a lot of spreadsheets. Like we got a lot of data that goes through.
Your finance background. Finance bro,
all the lookups and that. It's really helpful. Like we know everything like daily profit. We use Triple Whale as well. So that's massive.
Yeah.
We find that just works really well. Mm-hmm. In terms of like assigning expenses exactly, it's tough, but we've got a really good handle on how the data works, what to look for. A lot of spreadsheets, like I said. So we're always looking at the data. The data tells a story and then we act based on that data. We're not going, where are we going now? Like we're looking exactly what the data's saying. Because numbers can't lie. Like the numbers are what they are. And we scale based on that. There's a little bit of feel that comes of it as well, obviously. And our agency tell us that too. Like they say, like you sometimes know when to scale. Like you can feel the market tightening. Mm-hmm. Like you can feel, for instance, now like on the US side, we're really seeing that start to come back after being in a lull for an extended period of time, given that it's been sort of winter there. So now it's starting to come back and you can feel the market, like CPAs are coming in, profits going up, you know, your conversion rates increasing, all the green lights are on and all the chambers are firing to scale.
And so for people that are listening that are, you know, early on in their like, you know, e-com experience or running ads or even if they're not, but just it'd be really good to know, like when let's just say you're just jumping into an account just to do like a quick health check. What are like the main metrics that you need to see is okay? And then you're like, sweet, we're good or we can scale. Like what are the main metrics you'd look at to make decisions based off?
Yeah, I think, if you chuck a good creative in, Facebook's going to know and it's going to spend.
Yeah.
So what we look at is amount spent and CPAs. Like we have target CPAs.
Yeah.
We don't really worry about too much of these other metrics like frequency, click-through rate. Like if we can get a conversion at the lowest cost, I think that's
all that matters, right?
We run like our main campaign and it's a bit rogue. Like not a lot of people across it, big in the US, but we run a bid cap in a CBO. So basically we don't really care like what the frequency is as long as we're getting sales. And you need the creatives to do that though. Like you need to have, because a lot of businesses can't do it because they don't have enough creative. So we're just flying creatives in there, letting it spend, letting it figure out where to put the budget and just sort of, like
we've got about 250 creatives per country. Like we just spam creatives. And like, even though some of them might not work, like from a frequency perspective, someone might see an ad 5, 6, 7 times, but that seventh time, all right, that's the one. I'm not buying.
Yeah. Those are really good. I think those other metrics to diagnose problems, but at the end of the day, your CPA or your ROAS, like that's the only number.
Exactly. Daily profit. I think with Triple Whale, everything's flowing through to Triple Whale. If you don't understand your numbers and your profit, then you can't really scale them.
Yeah.
For sure.
And what's like, again, when you're making those decisions to scale, at what point did you bring in like Triple Whale? Because it's a decent cost for a business.
Yeah.
And for anyone that doesn't know, like explain what Triple Whale is.
Yeah. So Triple Whale is just basically a set of data which just spits out CPAs, basically all the numbers from your Pixel, all your Shopify analytics, just basically the health of your store on a daily perspective. But to answer your question about Triple Whale, I think we used to run a different platform, which was just like ad spend and ROAS.
Mm-hmm. Like Power BI or something.
Okay, yeah.
Like the oldie version of Triple Whale.
So I think it was only recently, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, we introduced Triple Whale.
Yeah. And it's been like really positive for the business.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think you have to understand your profitability daily because like if things start blowing out, the ad account starts blowing out, like you can lose a lot of money quickly.
Really quickly.
Yeah, so,
on that, like in terms of thinking back on some of the lessons you guys have had, does anything stand out as like, because I always find it's really interesting in terms of like advantage point for people listening that are operating business hearing like some of the things that people wasted the most amount of money on. Does anything pop into your head like this marketing campaign or this influencer or was anything stand out that you wasted money on?
We never did a massive macro influences. Mm-hmm. It's all just been micro. I think that's been great for us. We had a bad experience with a PR agency.
Oh, really?
Trying to push all our articles. But I don't know.
Yeah, we're pretty diligent in like where we put our cash. Like we've obviously had like a few losses here and there. Like the biggest loss for us has probably been like we changed our packaging. Like we had an issue where the spray was malfunctioning on our old oil packaging. So we're left with like, I don't know, 15,000 empty units. Wow. That we could just fill.
We just recently binned them the other day, actually.
it's not great for the environment, but.
So yeah, we lost a lot of money.
I wanted to ask you about your PR because like some people, you know, that maybe don't understand where costs are best spent, you know, in an econ business were like, all right, I'm 3 months in, I'm going to take on to a PR agency. Definitely not the time or place to spend, you know, on a retainer and PR. I was going to ask though, like with the articles you guys got, what's been the best, like the most successful way in terms of getting PR? Is it, you know, when you had an agency, is it finding who the editors are and pitching them directly? Is it using something like Linkby or
Linkby all the way?
Linkby?
Yeah. Linkby's great. Linkby's I think really even good. Just cold calling.
Yep.
On LinkedIn and stuff like that works quite well. But the agency is like, I don't know, you put a lot of trust in them and it creates like, they try to sell you the dream essentially. And you're like, oh yeah, we're going to be in all these articles and we're going to be across the media. But it's better to just build a brand yourself, like a personal brand and then, but then come to outreach you really.
Yeah. I'll ask you off air. I don't want to burn anyone. I'll ask you off air who I was. I don't know. Yeah. we won't burn anyone right now. Yeah, so Linkby's worked well for you guys.
Yeah, Linkby's great.
Super.
Yeah. How about in terms of not just getting it, the articles, have you found in terms of an acquisition channel, have you been profitable on sales? Like, does it drive sales for you or is it just good for awareness and social proof?
I think it's really good for credibility. Mm-hmm. From a sales, like if it's bringing in money, I think Facebook really drives a lot of our sales. So I think if you combine the two, like getting an article and getting people through your funnel, like they're going to work together.
Using that article as a creative.
Yes.
Absolutely pumped.
I think that's been one of our biggest ads. It's made like 70 grand.
So it's just like
grand.
A static ad of like a screenshot of the article.
It just works. Like you've got everything in there. You've got like the credibility, social proof is like the expert from expert sort of authority in there from 7 News. So yeah, that's been a massive one for us.
Yeah,
so
they're really good articles. I had a read of them just in preparation. They're really good. In terms of like channel diversification, what does that look like for you guys now? So you got Linkby and like some PR feeding in. Facebook's the main one. Is there anything else? You're doing TikTok ads? You're doing much micro influencers anymore?
We used to run TikTok ads. Yep. But we've had a little bit of trouble there. I'm just scaling. But we're trying to implement an organic strategy.
So yep.
We hired an organic TikTok marketing girl who creates behind the scenes and just really tries to hit our customer from a different angle. Google's strong for us as well. I think we want to launch in Amazon in the US.
Interesting,
which is really exciting.
It'd be interesting to hear how that goes. Like, it's just such a different, like Amazon, like building is like properly like growing a product on Amazon. It's like such a feel like it's like not, it's like e-com adjacent. It's like, it's not just a different, I've just got like no idea. Sometimes people come to me and feel like, I'm thinking of starting an e-com brand or Amazon. What do you think? I'm like, well, I don't know anything about starting an Amazon brand. So I can't really tell you, but that'll be interesting. And then I know you guys have had conversations in terms of, you know, you got a really, you know, exciting product. There will be retail interest at some point. What sort of store do you think suits, like what sort of store do you think suits Bruno Body? What sort of shop would you want to be in?
Yeah, sure. I think more so chemists for us, like just having the sun care range in there where a lot of our focus now has shifted towards sun care. So down the SPF route, we're doing a lot of products or formulating a lot of products there. We've got something coming out really soon. I don't want to divulge too much because we like to give it a bit of a surprise.
SPF, you're more talking my language now.
So we got something cool coming out there that we've been working on for like probably 12 months now, right? Yeah. So
sick.
That's
long MPD when it's like SPF stuff as well, like all the testing and whatnot.
For sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that comes with it. But yeah, we're super excited to launch that and obviously just want to get into stores eventually. But
when you guys are like having a discussion around like where do we take the brand in the future with new products, what are the considerations? Like, how do you decide what to launch next? Because it's really tempting to just be like, oh, let's just do that and that'll sell. And you know, it's like 100%. A lot of times brands have introduced products and they don't add the revenue you'd expect.
Yeah. Looking at like market desires again and like what we sort of need. Like for us, SPF was, because our initial products didn't have any SPF in them. Obviously we always recommend to use with an SPF, but then we were like, why are we recommending using other brands SPF and not having a Brunei SPF? So then we were like, okay, well let's start working on that as a first point of call, just because we need to have that as well.
Definitely.
And we want to have that in our brand. And then it's just, finding out what the different desires are in the market, figuring out like what are the different pain points of the people using our products and going back to that as the drawing board.
I think to answer your question, we obviously look at the market to see what our competitors are running. But we work very closely with a lot of our customers and like we ask them, what products do you want us to launch next? And it's easy for us because we're selling to them at the end of the day. So why wouldn't we ask them what they want? And so, basically we can sell to them directly.
Yeah. So you use your customers as like a data point for making those decisions. Now I want to ask you about the day. I know like you're full time and you've recently completely, you transitioned down to a couple of days of the old finance stuff to keep the brain sharp, but you've gone full time as well. Yeah. Talk to me both individually about the days you decided to quit your jobs. It's literally the shit I live for this stuff, man. Like this is the best. Doesn't matter when you have your first 10 mil year or whatever.
Yeah.
The day you quit your job and then you're finished, you say goodbye to all your coworkers on your last day and then you wake up the next day and you're like, I literally have all day to work and do whatever I want's the best. Talk me through it.
Well, I never really had like an actual full-time job. Like I worked full-time hours, but I wasn't really strained down to like a full-time job. Yeah. So like I was working both jobs at the time, doing massive days. And then eventually got to a point where I was just like, fuck it, I'm going all in on the business. And yeah.
How long ago was that?
Full time was probably about 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what were your parents thinking like when you said you're going to quit?
Yeah, they've got full faith in us. I think it's been a long journey for us for like 2 to 3 years. So yeah. Like they've always, they know the path we want to go down. So they're all for it.
And good decision to go like what you've been able to, you feel like you've been able to be more effective since going full time?
Oh, definitely, man. I think if you spend full time on the business, it's just like you're a lot more sharper.
So much
more across everything. Like nothing's getting missed. I think when you're at the start, like you got no choice but to combine the two jobs and you're just like, fuck, this is getting missed. This is getting missed. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's hard. It's quite hard at the start.
Yeah. What about you? So you transitioned down, like you kept a couple of days?
I had a couple of days for a while and then now just fully made the call to go all in. But for me, there was a period where I was actually in the finance job going to go up to more of a senior sales role. And my boss at the time, the head of distribution, they sort of pulled me aside and he goes, you think you can actually do it? Because he knew how well the business was going and how much growth we'd had over such a period of time. And I was a bit naive. I was like, yeah, I can do both. And like, mind you, like I was already just like absolutely working like 18 hour days. Like I'd do 10 days in finance, come home, work from like 7 till like midnight every day and doing that stuff. So I was cooked. But I was like, I didn't sort of want to let go because I did love working with the boys in finance. Obviously, it's not the same when it's your own business. Like it's yours. You're more fulfilled.
Yeah.
It's scarier. It's a beautiful thing, but it's just not the same as working for someone else. But yeah, then there was a time and he goes like, I don't think you can do both. And I started to really think about it. And I'm like, no, he's probably right. Like I can't. I got to choose one or the other here. And then I went for like a long walk with the managing director of the firm. And he goes like, he said to me, I'll never forget, he goes, you can't serve two masters. Like you got to make a decision. And then from that point, but they were always saying to me, look.
In a supportive way, right?
In a supportive way, 100%. They've been like, I couldn't say a bad word about that firm. Like I've learned a lot being there. Very grateful because small shop grew exponentially over like the 5 years when I was there.
Yeah.
Really good at what they do. So learned a lot from them. But that was really the day I was like, I'm making a decision. And I called Mike, I called my old man. And I was like, yeah, I'm thinking of, you know, dropping down a few days here and eventually gonna sort of pan out. And it happened sort of sooner than I expected as well. So now I'm completely full time.
That's crazy, dude. Full time.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Man, I don't because obviously it was my choice to do this, but like I would say, and maybe you guys won't be like me, right? Like enjoy the period when it's just you on this one business. I don't know if you're anything like me, but there'll come a day when you have fucking so many things on.
Yeah.
And like, I'm nostalgic for that period now, you know, in a way. Like I love what I'm doing and I wouldn't change. Obviously I could go back and just have one business. But it's like, if you're like anything like me or like, you know, every entrepreneur, want to do this and then you want to do that and you start doing all these things, like this period is so exciting. Like, and maybe you guys will stay doing this for like 5-10 years, like, and it'll be sweet. Like enjoy this period, man. I've found myself really thinking like, wow, dude, I didn't realize like all your time on one thing, you can have so much impact and momentum build so much when, especially when there's two people, all your time, all your energy onto that one business, onto solving that one problem, onto, like you said, having time to tweak all the little 1%ers and try everything. Cause that way you truly know you're leaving nothing on the table. And then when you're leaving nothing on the table, even if the things numbers are going up or they're going down, you can sleep well. It's when you know you've been a little bit taking the piss and you get a little bit distracted. That's when,
100%.
That's when the challenges come. But like on that point, in terms of like just building and all this momentum, you mentioned you've learned a lot from your old job. Like business for me anyway, is the best personal development tool you can ever go on. How would you say you guys like approach, growth, personal development? Is it something that's become more conscious since launching the business compared to before?
Yeah, I think so. Like I think like now, you sort of have to have that mindset now, right? Like you're, especially if we're both full-time, you're on basically death ground. Like Robert Greene, that author, talks about being on death ground, your back's up against the wall and you need to get it done. Like you just have to get it done. So then you need to start figuring out, well, how do we ensure that we're the most productive in the day-to-day basis? So like this year I've noticed Mike's just like dialed in 100% on his diet, like dialed in on training, like very sharp. And like me, myself, we're trying to make sure that we're ticking all sort of areas in life and we're making sure that we're not only just working really hard, but just making sure that we're healthy, we're fit, we're good to go, and just giving ourselves a massive amount of energy.
Is there anything that has surprised either of you about being in business?
Oh, what a roller coaster ride it is. You get some of the highest highs and some of the lowest lows, like in the same day even, you know, it's a crazy ride.
That's probably the biggest thing, just trying to like navigate through it. And now we've just learned, like I think a massive thing is just to try and stay as stoic as possible. Yeah. Like don't let yourself get too pushed in, you know, in the highs direction when they happen or the lows. You just got to stay level headed the whole time, because when it rains, it pours, like something can change and can change quick. And you might be like sitting on the top of the mountain and then next thing you know, like you're feeling terrible about something. Something comes through and you're like, fuck, not again. And then you just got to really just stay level headed and just that's the whole thing.
You really have to, sorry to cut you off.
No, go.
You really have to manage your emotions. I think at the start, like someone would say, oh, this product's shit, or it doesn't work. And be like, oh, like I'd get really emotional about it. But I think we've really moved past that. And like, you got to keep it separate, man.
Yeah. That's funny, man. Like I had the same thing. It's like, dude, why didn't anyone tell me this is what business was? Yeah. It's like, cause you're just constantly solving problems, and solving problems doesn't mean it's always a negative, but you're still always solving problems. And like, I don't think people realize, like, you know how like you hear like people like Steve Jobs and heaps of entrepreneurs that wear the same thing every day, so they don't have to, they're just one less decision because you get decision fatigue.
Yeah,
and like this, you have to make so many decisions. And I think like being able to make, this is something that I learned as well, because you can procrastinate so much and things can blow out so much in time. Like you're better off to make a fast decision, you know, based off some data and whatever, if it's gut feel, whatever, but make a fast decision and get your learnings quick either way. But sitting on it and debating and back and forth, that's actually where the problems come. You stagnate, things start to blow out and start taking a lot more time. But yeah, bro, it's just that journey, isn't it? Right. Yeah, what do you say? Obviously there's challenges. What's your favorite part about like, you know, having your own business, would you say?
Yeah. Oh, I think when we go away on the weekends, like everyone's going to work on Monday and I'm just coming in and working forever. But nah, man, I think just building something that you're proud of, and like obviously we work super hard on the business and like we just put all of our energy into it every day and every week. And it's just like we've built something amazing here. And I think that's something to reflect on and be grateful for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When it's your own thing, it's just different. Like I said before, like you've got a different level of fulfillment within your life. Like put it this way, like I've never struggled to get out of bed to work on the business. Mm-hmm, but like if you're working for someone else, there's days you just can't be bothered.
Yeah.
And it's just so much easier to have discipline for your own thing as well. I think we're both massive on just being disciplined. Like motivation's not going to be there all the time, but because it's yours, like you just have this obligation to do everything you can for it. So,
and has there been like any books that you guys have read that have like really, you know, opened your eyes to certain things? I hope with business, you mentioned Sell Like Crazy. Yeah. Was there any other books?
It's actually one of the first books I've ever read, man. I'm not really a reader, but
pretty good first book to read, man.
It's
cool. I'm into like the books on psychology. So, I don't know if you've read Psycho Cybernetics. I just finished that recently.
Yeah, I've read half of it. It's cool. It's just so old school, man.
It is,
it's a bit of a hard read, but the message, the reason I feel like I didn't get through it, because I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
When I get something, I don't need, I'm not the person that needs to know all the science behind it. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
But like another thing, I don't know if this is something that has been part of your journey, but for me, it's like the law of attraction visualization has been massive for me.
Yeah.
Some people will want to understand like all the quantum physics about it, like Dr. Joe Dispenza and whatnot. For me, it's like, I can understand all that, but if I know something in my core, I already know and I don't need to question it. Have you guys, like in terms of like, you know, high performers, high achievers, it's almost always linked back to their habits and, you know, and practices like you guys dialing in on your fitness and your diet and, you know, going to bed at the same time, waking up. Has there been anything that you've introduced to your lives since like taking business and this personal growth journey more seriously that have like had a big uptick in the way you've been able to perform or think more clearly or anything like that?
Great question. I think for us, just like setting good habits is a must. I think even for us, we always keep each other super accountable. Like if one of us is slipping up, we'll be like, oh man, like is this going to get done? Or like we leave it everything on the table. So I think setting good habits, I think if you got to have a good balance I think we're able to have a good balance of gym, eating healthy, work. But at the start, it's not really like that.
It's not
like,
balance comes after. But like when you're in that initial like explosive growth phase, you will work 14, 16 hours a day and you just be living off adrenaline and you don't care. You're fine. It's the best thing ever.
It's ready to go again. Like for me, like having a, like the, this is the simplest thing, but just having a list of stuff to get through. Just every day, like all night before, whatever you do, like everyone talks about it. But if you have a to-do list, really hard not to get it done if you make yourself accountable.
Yeah.
And then just like sort of punishing yourself like with little things if you don't do it. So it's like, you know, setting like a contract of yourself to go and do it and just making sure that you get it done. That's really the how we've found like, or how I've found anyway to really get through.
So this might be putting you boys on the spot. Like, but if I asked you, if you had to nail it down to like one core thing, like what would you put the success of the brand down to?
Oh, I think hard work, man. Like hard work just rewards everything. Like we're smart, we're good at what we do, but like if you don't put the work in, then you're not going to get where we are today.
Yeah, and that point you mentioned on discipline, it's like some days you absolutely don't. Like even like we can say, it's fucking awesome having your own business, but some days it's like it's not some days, like some task you have to do, you're like, I wish I didn't have to do this part of it, but.
That's the thing, when it's yours, it's like, you got to do it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
And you're okay with it.
Yeah. And
up
like,
to a certain point.
Have you guys ever had, like this is going, like changing topics a little bit more, but like in terms of like something that's become like a lot more front of mind over the last 10 years, but more specifically like five, particularly around all the COVID like lockdown dramas and stuff, but like mental health and staying like feeling good in terms of like that state. If you're an entrepreneur, you really can't afford to let yourself slip. It's just so hard. You need to be as sharp as you can. You need to feel good every day. Have you guys ever struggled with mental health, or is that something you've had to like consciously manage? Or
I wouldn't say we've struggled with mental health. Like we definitely have shit as days, really good days. But I think having a co-founder, like both of us, we lean heavily on each other. When someone's feeling shit, I'll take more of the load.
Yeah.
We really lean on each other when times get tough. So I wouldn't say I've had.
We optimize for like different things. Like we want to feel fulfilled in what we're doing, and that's just part of the process. You're gonna have these days where you wake up and you feel shit, but it's okay. Like it's normal. Like being sad is a normal emotion. Like we don't look into it, read into it too much. And that's what I said before. Like staying stoic between your emotions is really important. So just trying to manage that and not get too pulled in either direction, and just not be at the whim of your own emotions is really important.
And I feel like as well, I agree with what you just said, or at least I can definitely relate to it. Like if you know you're on the right path, even if things are hard, and again, I'm no psychologist or doctor. It's like, it's hard to, I feel like people get depressed when they're lost. Yeah. And sometimes you don't know why you're lost, but like a lot of the times it comes down to, you know, you're not on the right path, or, you know, you're spending your time doing the wrong things. And I feel like that's when things can really spiral. And for me, one of the things I've always done, not that I've ever had like, I wouldn't say a full struggle with like mental health, but I'm ever in a bit of a funk, you know, a day or two where you're just not feeling good. Reset in terms of what are my goals, what do I want to achieve, why do I want to achieve it, connect with that. And it's like, I'm a brand new person, what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, it's awesome. We've got to start to wrap this up. But one or two more questions I wanted to ask in terms of like e-com and your focuses for this year. What do you think, like, where is like the potential on the table for this year? Like, what are you guys really focusing on to grow the brand?
Yeah. Well, I think coming out of Oz Summer now, we're really going to hit the US hard. Mm-hmm. UK as well, really build a brand in the international markets. New product development, we've been working for like 12 months on some products now, so really excited to get those out to market. Retail, hopefully we can land a nice retail deal over the next couple of months. And
that'd be sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's pretty much it. Yeah. So, it's not much that.
And so like, what's the vision of the brand? And those, talk about just those products you've been working on. Is it realistic to maybe launch them summer 2020, like leading into summer 2024? Is that the goal for some of these new products, or is it
for sure
going to be longer? Yeah,
for sure. For a couple of them, some of them that we're doing in terms of sunscreen take a little bit longer naturally, just because you got to go, you know, through the TGA, and it's a bit more of a tedious process.
Yeah,
but for sure, we should have another couple products out.
Exciting
summer this year.
Yeah,
but I guess the vision of the brand is just to be full suite tanning sun care. Like we want to go into, as I said, go more into SPF, into tanning. And then maybe we'll start looking at sunless tanning as well eventually too.
So, sunless tanning?
Yeah. What just even, a full suite.
Like, what's sunless tanning? Like just,
oh, just like
more,
fake tan. Fake
oh,
tan.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking you fucking, yeah. You've created, you've got some brilliant idea. No, like, no, no. Boys, let's go to get to chat. Sunless tanning. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking, I don't know, if I can supplement it. I don't know. But yeah, it's really exciting, boys. First podcast. You guys did great. Yeah. Let's keep fucking growing the brand and we'll have you on again in a year or two. And then we can talk about how far you've grown. We can 10X 100K months. Yeah, you know what I mean? That'll be fun. So good to meet you, boys. I'm really excited to see what you guys do from here, but thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks
for having
us. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or you got something out of it, do yourself a favor, do me a favor, do your friends a favor and share this with them and they can come along on this journey with us. Thanks again and I'll see you next time.